back here on In Focus on News Radio KMAN. Again, last segment. Playing a little bit with my mic here. Again, last segment, we had State Senator Tom Hawk, a pre-recorded interview. Again, if you missed any of that, you can check it out on archive on our website, News Radio KMAN. But we're switching gears. In studio with me now is Governor's Military Council Executive Director Perry Wiggins. Mr. Wiggins, thanks for coming in.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Or should I say General? I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
And, yeah, first of all, how was your holidays? How did it go?
How was everything? It was good. I spent time in Alaska. It made me appreciate Kansas. You know, people think Kansas is cold. I can tell you that with about 5 hours of daylight and an average of about 15 degrees, I was ready to get back to Kansas and enjoy the warm weather.
Oh, man, I couldn't handle it. I struggle with Kansas weather being from California. So imagining what you dealt with up there in Alaska is nothing fun to me.
Sure, it was good to spend time with the grandchildren. But, you know, sooner or later, the return on investment when you can't feel your fingers and toes, it's time to head back south.
Yeah, you have to pay for that investment.
Sure.
So we're going to talk a little bit about some of the I would like to talk with you a little about some of the changes that have been going on. As we know, there's been a change General James Mattis has resigned as the 26th Secretary of Defense, and there's been some talk about possibly General Mark A. Milley filling in. He's in his place. And first of all, I'd like to hear a little bit of your thoughts on General Mattis. Have you ever met him, and what was your thoughts of his position there or his job there as Secretary of Defense?
Yeah, I have met him. I met him in Anbar Province in Iraq. We did a transition of authority with the Marines in the 82nd Airborne Division. He was a one-star at the time. He was very well-respected. He was considered a philosopher, a very intellectual individual, and I think that people saw that when he took the helm as the Secretary of Defense. You know, you talked about Mark Milley. Mark Milley's going to go. He's been nominated to be the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which is the counterpart to the Secretary in a very important position. But, you know, the thing I think we're going to see now is whenever you have a new Secretary of Defense, the azimuth changes, priorities change. So I think we'll see a shift in our defense posture and what we're focusing on and priorities with the new, even acting Secretary.
Yeah, see, I did mix up some of those positions there. But you talked a little bit about some of the changing priorities. What were some of the priorities that General Mattis was putting into place?
Well, you know, he had a reform policy that he came in. He wanted to be a reformer. He wanted to limit the size of the Secretary of Defense's office up in the Pentagon. And I think that's a great move. You know, I think in some regards, we've increased positions. Most of those are civilian positions for oversight. And, you know, the uniformed military serves our civilian counterparts. So we work for the Secretary of Defense and the civilians. And that's understandable. But in some cases, we have placed layers upon layers up there in some of these Secretary of Defense offices that I think are unnecessary. And I think General Mattis saw that and was trying to eliminate those positions, not only to save money, but to reduce bureaucracy.
And with a new person stepping in, there is an interim or an acting Secretary of Defense, Patrick Shanahan. Is it a little ways off before we know how those priorities might end up changing then? Do we have to wait to see who will end up filling the position full-time?
Sure. You know, Mattis, having wore the uniform, understood the military side. I think it'll take some time for the new secretary to kind of get an understanding of the military side, get a comfort with it. Coming out of Boeing, which, you know, he was an executive at Boeing, he has a different mindset. So I think it'll take a little bit of time, but I think we'll see priorities start to shift a little bit away from the human side or human dimension more into the technological dimension. So we'll see some of that budget, that requests that we've had in the past start to go toward technology, which, by the way, China and Russia has really been improving their technology. And so we never want to see parity with our counterparts or our competitors. And that's something I think we'll see out of the new secretary.
And I'd also like to hear your thoughts on General Milley stepping into that role in the Joint Chiefs of Staff. How do you think he'll be able to influence things around there?
Well, you know, Mark Milley is an incredible intellectual person in his own right. I think what you'll see is him take a look at the future. And that's what the Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff does. He has really a mandate under his Title 10 authorities to advise the president on where he sees the military going or where it should go. He's got a tough challenge, especially in a constrained resource environment, and the fact that the military is having problems recruiting personnel for the first time in a long time. You know, the Army undershot its recruitment goal by 10,000 troops last year. That's significant because you can improve and increase force structure, but if you can't fill those positions, you're for naught.
Definitely. And I know it's might be a big question. Has there been any indications on what has led to some of that decreased recruitment?
It always comes to the economy. We have an incredible economy right now. Very positive economy means jobs, and with jobs means folks have choices. So a lot of our servicemen and women are the ones that are joining. They opt to go somewhere else. The other thing is only 3 out of 10 individuals out there in society are qualified to become a part of the armed forces. And that's a small segment. And when you're talking about less than 0.5% and you're talking about a percentage of the population that's very small, you cannot miss it by much.
Yeah, and I can imagine a small influence can make a big change in that. With that said, we do have a caller on the line, so let's get on over to that. Caller, go ahead. You're on in focus.
Well, thank you for consideration of these situations that we're faced with. When you change generals at Fort Riley and the different attitudes towards the community, you know, we here as non-military face a threat with the water runoff of the rain from Fort Riley. And thank you for your efforts discussing those items. But there's another big grill in the room, the wives, the suicide rate of the wives of the military and the former wives and the ex-military wives and former wives, a really serious neglected problem. My granddaughter recognized the love of her life here at K-State when he was from a military family, and as he graduated, he talked about joining the military, and she immediately put her foot down. I'm not going to become a military wife, and sent him packing back to his family in Chicago. A shock to us, who had worked with him in their relationship and enjoying life. This one of the items, mental health here in Kansas, is being inflicted. By the struggles of the families, of the military families. Thank you for considerations.
Now, thank you for your question and sharing your family, you know, situation. I will tell you that, you know, having served in the Cloth Nation for 34 years, you know, taking care of our families, the quality of life, and looking out for them, even beyond the uniform, is something that the Army has really tried to grab a hold of and institute programs to facilitate not only a smooth transition out of the uniform for the service member and their families, but afterwards, even beyond, because we've realized that it is a tough transition. It is something that's hard to get a grasp on because the cultures are different. It really is something, and I've realized it myself, having come out of the uniform just recently, that, you know, trying to get accustomed to the civilian world has been a challenge, not only for me, but for my family. So I appreciate you sharing. And that is a challenge. It's something that we got to continue to keep in our forefront of our priorities, is taking care and husbanding those individuals in our military, both serving now and those that have served, and their families. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you, caller. Thanks for calling in. And that kind of is a little bit of a good segue into another discussion that another topic we had lined up for discussion, which was issues with licensing and credentialing and how that affects Army and military spouses finding work at the post that they end up being stationed at.
Yeah, well, I've said this before on the show, but you know, when I came in, about 11% were married in the force. Nowadays, over 60% of our servicemen and women are married. So when they come as a team. The spouses are a big part of that. The children are a big part of that. And a lot of our spouses are professionals. They have careers in their own right. And so they come here with an expectation of jobs, And you know, in Kansas, we don't have a jobs problem. We've got a workforce problem. But some of these positions that they come to occupy require a licensing or credentialing. Tom Phillips and I helped eliminate the problem, at least somewhat, with our nurses last year when we had the governor sign the Enhanced Nurses Licensure Compact, which puts us in a consortium with 26 other states here in the nation so they can practice. But there are other positions out there, teaching, X-ray technicians, that need those credentialing licensing fees waived and accepted so that we can get that intellectual capital into the state of Kansas, and those spouses can go to work the day they arrive. That alleviates a lot of stress on the family that require those dual incomes, and I think it's something that will help the state of Kansas out in the long run.
And with this sort of a – I'm not sure if there's any specific concrete solution already planned or in mind, but would this be sort of like an exception for specifically for military spouses, or would this be sort of maybe an across-the-bar type deal?
Well, you know, I think initially we look at it as a test for the military spouses because I think they're the largest population that influx into Kansas. But I think by and large, Kansas needs and deserves that intellectual capital that's coming in from the outside. So I think it's something that we can broaden the aperture to include everybody. I think it's just a great deal, a win-win situation for Kansas, and I think it's a win-win situation for our spouses of all those who decide to call Kansas home.
And with that, I think it might be a good time to take our last break of the morning. Coming up after this, we'll have more with Governor's Military Council Executive Director Perry Wiggum. Stay tuned here on In Focus on News Radio KMAN.
KMAN Morning News is sponsored by ESB Financial, member FDIC, an equal housing lender. Resolve to begin 2019 with a fresh start for your financial future. ESB Financial, our bank is big on you.
It's time to get on board at Manhattan Regional Airport. With larger jets now serving the all-new terminal, Manhattan